Log Talk Radio.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Will a strong and united America still be a force for freedom and prosperity around the world?
America has created the longest peacetime economic expansion in our history.
We are the heirs of that first revolution.
Good common sense and sound judgment of the American people. And their essential love of justice.
Happy Easter Sunday from the Kudzu Vine. Welcome back, Catherine.
Hello, thank you for covering for me while I was gone.
Well, of course, thank Del Cardwell for that.
Oh, yeah,
well,
that's great.
Yeah, and welcome back, Tim.
Good evening, sir.
Yes, well, a Sunday... Easter Sunday, and it you know, apparently was going to rain an earlier forecast, but it turned out to be a beautiful day. I don't know about y'all, but had a strange occurrence this Sunday. It's the first time I've ever had a Sunday sermon going on while the luckily it wasn't the alarm part of the fire system, but just those blinking lights that are, I guess, targeted more towards the blind or visually impaired. I'm sorry, deaf. Deaf is actually what those are targeted towards. Going off the entire service. And every so often, this lady's voice telling you to evacuate the building, but apparently it was dust in the system, not any type of fire or anything else. So it was a different experience. no Easter egg hunts today. Catherine, Tim, anything for y'all on Easter?
No, quiet day.
I went to a lovely brunch and saw some of my friends, but other than that, very quiet.
Yeah, well, then that can be good.
I got to play with an iPad.
An iPad, so they're actually out.
Yeah. It was a lot of fun. I'm waiting for mine. It's due here sometime after April 15th.
Well, good deal. So I don't know all that can do. I know that I have the iPhone, I've seen my touch, but the iPad's supposed to be the next level.
Yeah.
Well, you can keep us up to date on that. Well, I guess, you know, politics didn't slow down, even though it was a spring recess weekend, if you will. And there's just so many different places to talk about and start, but... let's kind of start in Texas. Kay Bailey Hutchins, since she ran for governor, didn't even make the runoff. A pretty sad little attempt. And, you know, the whole time when she was running that campaign, she talked about, I'm going to resign the Senate. I'm going to resign the Senate. There's going to be this special election because, you know, I'm going to run for governor. I'm going to, you know, go all the way. Well, she didn't go all the way. And now she's decided to stay in the Senate. Tim, what's your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, for some reason, I never did quite believe that she was going to quit. She kept backing up the date she was going to do it, and then she didn't want to talk about it altogether. And, of course, you know, the Republican leadership wants her to stay, so there'll be no Senate race in Texas to worry about this year. That's money that they can take and spend somewhere else in what would have been an open and competitive race.
Yeah, but it seems like they still have a Senate, and they still have a race. John Sharp, ex-state comptroller, ex-railroad commissioner, and I guess a state senator, and he's been their nominee in 98 and 2002. Obviously, in Texas, he didn't fare too well, but he seems like a legitimate, you know, candidate. He's more than a heartbeat on two legs.
But there's no race this year, David. It wouldn't be till 2012.
So
right.
They do have it at some point. But, Catherine, what's your thought on that?
I'm with Tim. I never thought she was going to resign. When she kept putting it off, I was pretty sure she would, if she didn't prevail in the primary, that she would stay. And honestly, I don't blame her. And when it comes to Republican senators, you know, I like having women in the Senate, so.
Yeah, now, I'll tell you this. I wonder if this is going to hurt her even in 2012. I mean, I just get the growing sense that she's not very popular among the most conservative voters in her party. I mean, do y'all find that?
Oh, I think that's true.
This is never about her, though. This is. There was Cornyn and McConnell right there with her when she makes this announcement. They did not want a Senate race in Texas this year. Whatever happens in 2 years is 2 years from now. Texas is a big state. we have seen some of the fundraising numbers that the Republicans are lagging behind the Democrats a little, and I'm sure we'll talk about that later in the show. But they just did not want a Senate race in Texas this year. And who knows, she might go ahead and retire in 2 years. But I believe the Republican leadership got exactly what they wanted out of this. I believe they couldn't have played this scenario any better. Governor Perry beats her, and then she decides to stay so there's no Senate race.
Yeah, I mean, so it's one less place that they have to worry about, but although it probably wouldn't be a place they have to worry too much in Texas. But it could be that the Tea Party movement uses that to stir something else up, because I just get the sense that that's not their lady, because, you know, they backed Medina and then Perry from there, and so she was like the number three choice. So we'll see what goes on from there. I guess I want to stay in Texas, because I believe we had two Texas stories, but then as I look at my notes, I know what the other Texas story, let's go ahead and talk about that, is President Obama got a little bit of cover on the foreign policy side. You know, Republicans like to, you know, hit the president and really any Democrat on foreign policy. Oh, weak on this, weak on that, wrong on that. But James Baker, former Secretary of State and just a, you know, huge Bush loyalist and just such a big figure throughout the Reagan and first Bush administration, and actually helped there be a second Bush administration, he came to the defense of President Obama, said that he supports the overwhelming majority of his foreign policy agenda. Catherine, what do you think of this?
I thought that was really good news for our country. And for President Obama, I'm actually really glad to see that. You know, I think, you know, some of the Republicans are only a few, but some of them are coming around to supporting what's best for the country. And I think we will be better the more we see that. I think that. You know, I was surprised to see Jack Kingston isn't being as critical of the health care reform as you might expect. So hopefully this is a trend.
Yeah. Did this comment surprise you, Tim?
I'm a little bit surprised because it seems like here we have a Democratic president who is not meeting resistance on his foreign policy agenda as much as he would be on his domestic agenda. It would seem that would be the opposite. I would have thought going into office that perhaps the president would have met the biggest amount of resistance on things like Iraq, Afghanistan, dealings with Israel, Guantanamo, places like that. But he's not getting the kind of blowback on the foreign stage as he is on the domestic. So it's exactly opposite of what I thought would happen. What do you think? You think that's about right?
Yeah, I mean, I think Catherine was alluding to, they used to pack everything. But, you know, I guess this is a guy that he wanted to see, you know, Bush be president and was going to do what he had to in Florida. But maybe I guess he's become more and more of a diplomat in his later years. And so he's been a little more fair-minded. And honestly, if you think about it, I don't know that this has been a big radical departure from a lot of what the foreign policy was under the Bush administration. I don't think President Obama would have gotten us into this, you know, into Iraq. Certainly Afghanistan was a different place. But now that we're in it, I think it's limited in what he can do unless he, you know, goes away from what his generals say. So
but Afghanistan has probably played out pretty much like Bush would have played it, don't you think?
Yeah.
Yes, and so and really it's one where if you looked at the polls, I mean, there were, you know, there was a good sizable chunk of the American population that don't go into Iraq, but on Afghanistan, I think it was in the high 80s, and then you had like a single-digit number opposing, and then you had some undecideds. I mean, it was a very much more clear-cut, you had many more Democrats that said, you know, Afghanistan, they did harbor the Taliban, that was responsible for 9/11. It's a different place, a different battlefront, if you will. So you can kind of see where that came from being.
So it was just kind of a surprise to read, given that there's so many Republicans now that, you know, just so critical of the president, and that's, you know, what they live for, if you will. I guess moving on to another topic, MSNBC's first read, they actually did a little analysis between Chuck Todd and Ron Brownstein of the LA Times, and Ron Brownstein looked, and he found that there were a good many differences between 2010 and 1994, because, of course, a lot of the Republicans, they want 1994 to be, you know, pretty much a carbon copy of 2010. And so I was reading that, and it caught my eye, and I think it caught a lot of other people's eyes in the political world. After reading that, Catherine, what do you make of it?
Well, you know, I've been saying for the last few weeks that all this, you know, gloom and doom about 2010 elections, I think is, I think it's way too early to say. And with this passage of healthcare, and I think the approval ratings of the healthcare reform are going to go up. I think that more and more people, as they learn more about it, are going to approve of it. I don't think it's going to be as bad a year for Democrats as everybody seems to think. I think the obstructionism of the Republicans is going to come back and bite them. I really do. You know, but I'm kind of a Pollyanna that way. I always try to find the good in, in the bad news. But I thought that that analysis was pretty on spot. You know, there's some things that maybe resemble 1994 in some ways, but then I think overall I think we're in good shape. I think that, you know, President Obama, considering the plate he was served when he took office, I think he's doing a great job.
Yeah, Tim, your thoughts on this poll?
Well, obviously, first of all, we probably are going to view this a little differently than we would have 2 or 3 weeks ago, because frankly, if health care reform had not passed, it would have been disastrous.
Mm-hmm.
Better to run with this thing, having said, look what we've accomplished, than for the Republicans to beat us over the head with, look at this do-nothing Congress that is heavily loaded in favor of the majority party, and it still can't pass anything. Another thing, I believe Catherine loves to say the gift that keeps on giving. Well, hey, that is Michael Steele lately, right,
yeah.
Guys? I mean, when the Republicans should really be high-fiving each other, they're having to explain instead why a staffer is taking some donors to a bondage lesbian-oriented club out there in Los Angeles and spending $2,000 for a meal and turning it in on the expense account. And plus, still, he can't be quiet. He cannot be quiet. He says something stupid. He does something stupid. So we'll go with that gift that keeps on giving. Another thing, and a very important thing, is that's different from 1994. We are not seeing the overwhelming number of retirements from the
right.
Democrats that we saw then. As a matter of fact, to date, more Republicans are vacating their seats than are Democrats. And another thing we didn't have in 1994 that we have now is these Tea Parties. Who knows what that bunch is going to do? At the moment, they seem to be in primary mode and turning on incumbent Republicans. Like, for instance, we've talked about Kentucky a lot, right? I mean, Rand Paul is a darling of theirs. We've talked about how easy it would be for Charlie Crist to just waltz through the election in Florida. And instead, they're backing Marco Rubio, and they're probably going to knock Crist off. They are going to run a candidate in Harry Reid's Senate race. If they split the Republican vote, Reed could win right there. You know, things like that. So there's a lot of differences between now and 94. And right now, I just don't think things are as bad for us now as they were then.
Yeah, I think they mentioned that Democrats are more unified, and that's another huge factor in our favor, because a lot of times people are running away from the party, then people will say, oh, there must be something wrong with the party. And what
there's another thing, David. In 94, they had a face. They had Newt Gingrich out there. Who had they got as their elected face to lead them to this victory this year?
I mean, no idea. Known commodity. I mean, Mitch McConnell's probably one of the most known people. And I bet, you know, 3 out of 4 Americans don't necessarily, at least swing voters, don't know who that is.
Yeah.
And he's getting slapped in the face in his own state because Grayson's his hand-picked boy. And the voters are turning on him there.
Yeah. I mean, so that's one of the better, you know, known folks they have, although they probably don't want a face because then you could put a face on something and attack it. Yeah, and so and you were getting on to the next thing, the GOP's money woes. They got woes on both ends. They can't raise it, and they waste it. Now, Tim, first thing, you know, when somebody says, hey, why did you buy the $2,000 meal? I'm sure the staffers said, well, because they wouldn't let you bring in food. You know, I mean, that's got to be the reason. But then, of course, you know, the party of family values, you know, when they're having, you know, expenditures of, you know, of that sort. But, I mean, no matter where you work for, how could you justify wasting money on that has absolutely nothing to do with the operations of your business, if you will?
Yeah. Well,
you
want to hear some numbers?
Say, as always, I look at this a little bit differently. While I think that that's an outrageous expense, I think the thing that bothers people more is Michael Steele's lavish, you know,
yeah,
private jets, limousines, expensive meals, you know, all this luxury travel, plus his he was getting some, you know, speaking engagement, paid for some speaking engagements. He wrote a book before, and they didn't know he was going to write a book. So I think that those kinds of things, and it's a lot more money, too. I think it's easy to pick on this strip club in California. And granted, I'm not going to say I think that's a good expense, but I think this other stuff is much more troubling to big donors who see, you know, now that they've caught him in this, you know, this one big expense, they're not going to do that anymore. But are they going to be able to stop him from, you know, these luxurious sort of bonus, you know, the travel and the limousines and everything? I mean, those are the kind of things that racks up a lot, some serious cash. What was it, like $17,000 in 1 month for private jets?
Yeah, and in the meantime, let's just give you one set of figures. This is money that's on hand for the National Republican Campaign Committee. Now, this particular group tries to elect Republicans to the House of Representatives. They got $6 million. And the Democrats have nearly $20 million in their account. They can outspend the Republicans 3-1 in a year where Republicans should make significant gains in the House. That kind of money is going to make a lot of difference in a lot of close races. And like you said, still going around throwing it out like that. And now you got Tony Perkins telling his people don't send any money to the Republican National Committee, give it to individual candidates. Instead, you got Karl Rove starting up a bunch that's trying to raise money independent of the Republican National Committee. So then I'm left with a question. Well, where does this leave Michael Steele, David? Can he possibly survive with stuff like this going on?
Yeah, you kind of have to think they give him till 2010, but there sure are a whole lot of people that want to get rid of him immediately, and he'll be remembered as a joke. I think this is a party that has real race problems, real diversity problems, and, I mean,
Not going to help.
They don't
them.
Want to be seen. Well, but they don't want to be. They don't want to be seen. Some of the people in the party, like, you know, pitch the minority out of guy as fast as we can. So it's just a mess. They've
so
got
you
on their
think
hands.
It would look better to fire him after the election than, of course, before?
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of like this is who they've elected. They're going to give it, you know, let him finish his cycle out. Because, you know, those things you can easily change after a cycle. I don't know if his term is 2 or 4 years, but after you know, the cycle happens, then that's the time they can, you know, quietly get rid of him at that point. Or, you know, maybe at some point he shames himself. I mean, you know, I guess I just know how hard it is to raise all this money. So I'm just not the kind of person that could ever even think about wasting it this, you know. Lifestyles of the rich and famous at a political operation seems a little crazy. And then lifestyles of something else from the staffers.
It's especially interesting if you contrast it to, while he's not the chairman of the DNC anymore, Howard Dean was notoriously cheap. Like, when he was running for president and when he was DNC chair, when he came to Atlanta, he didn't even stay in a hotel. He stayed with his friends. So, yeah. I would think that Tim Kaine, Howard Dean was almost to a fault, but I believe that Tim Kaine is probably also a very good, very conscientious about that money, because it is, like you said, it is very hard to raise. And if you're going to come back to the well and ask for more money, people are going to want to know how it was spent. And I think the Republicans are going to face a lot of trouble, and they already are. You know, the donors are saying, well, you know, what's happening to this money? And especially the big donors, I would think.
You know you're in trouble when you're the butt of late-night comedy jokes.
Yes.
Party chairs are not supposed to be out front and center like this. The main job of a party, national party chair, is to raise money. I just gave you a set of figures that shows not only is that not occurring, but he himself has become an issue in a negative way to a party that's supposed to be on the upswing, and it's just something that they don't need right now. Right?
Yeah. She's just come in, and, you know, he just doesn't seem to have a direction, and, of course, you know, flying across the country, using it as his way to have a lavish lifestyle. It's just... You know, for them, it's very unfortunate. And then, I guess maybe hurts the overall political process. And then people say, well, why don't I want to give money to these people just wasting it? It's kind of like, you know, when you see somebody at a charity waste money, then it kind of hurts all charities sometimes.
Right.
People say, I don't want to give it to charity. Just waste it. And so, you know, that's another overriding thing to think about. Well, I guess moving on to another thing. Now, we've got polls, and we've probably finished the whole show doing nothing but talking about polls. We'll try to move through a little quicker than that. But the first one that really struck me were two polls this week in Alabama. And Republicans lead, and it doesn't matter how you split this thing up. You can take the weakest Republican and the strongest Democrat, and the Republicans are winning this race. I mean, even against the incredibly controversial Roy Moore, he beats both Democratic candidates. Now, there is some divide on who beats who worse. Actually, I take it back. Ron Sparks actually does have a lead on Roy Moore. That's the only matchup. And that was in the Rasmussen Report poll. I don't believe that was even in the public policy polling poll. But, Tim, what do you make all this?
Yeah, well, first of all, for anyone who's looking at this polling, pay no attention to the polls with Ivy. She has dropped out of the governor's race. I guess she looked around and the field was a little bit too crowded, and she was running in the middle of the pack, and she's dropping down to the lieutenant governor's race. So that part of it doesn't matter. I Scott Rasmussen himself, in his lead into this story, in his teaser said, Republicans are slightly ahead in what appears to be a wide open race. And I believe he's got that about right. I'm not sure. I'm not even sure who the Democratic nominee is going to be. It looks to me like Davis's vote on health care has hurt him with primary voters over there. It's given Sparks an issue. Latest round of polling shows them dead even. Dead even.
Yeah. Yeah, and the electability. I mean, I think that's another factor, too. Because if you look, I mean, I just don't see how you can look at Artur Davis and say this guy has a good shot at winning, because Roy Moore does better than him head-to-head in every matchup, and you put the fact that in the primary he has made enemies because of his vote on health care. I think he hit the nail on the head there. Catherine, thoughts?
Well, you know, I'm always hesitant to put a lot of stock in polls this early, but I would love to run against Roy Moore. And if the Republicans don't have any money, the Democrats can do a real nice campaign against that guy.
So. Yeah, I mean, that does seem to be like the only way to possibly win this. Because, I mean, it looks like almost under any scenario, it's going to be a more than uphill battle.
I'm usually the one who doesn't want the crazy running because I don't want the chance that he might get elected. But I'm going to change my general – you know, Tim and I agree usually on this. But I'm going to change my feelings about it in this one because, I just can't imagine that he could get elected.
Yeah, you would have to think, although this could be the right year for it. I mean, under any other year, the Democrat wins, but in Alabama, and particularly in this year, it's tough.
I tell you what I think is going to happen, though, and I think it's going to help us anyway. I don't believe the Democrats are going to have a runoff. I believe one of those guys are going to sprint away from the other one, and I think that Sparks has his issue now because the Davis vote on health care made it look like a liberal congressman was just voting that way simply to tout his conservative credentials in a conservative state in a statewide race, and nobody really believes that, especially Democratic primary voters who do tend to be a little bit more liberal. Secondly, I believe the Republicans are going to have a runoff. In the polling I've seen, even the leader, Byrne, is running like at 28-29%. And a lot of the polling, Moore has been running 5 to 6 points behind him. I think you may have a runoff between this two. And if Judge Moore acts like he normally acts, he'll probably bloody his opposition up. Maybe soften him up for the general, and we'll just have to see what happens
yeah.
there. That's another thing, too. Moore may be getting the support of these teabaggers, and where Byrne is a more conventional Republican candidate, they may not be too wild about supporting him in the general. That's another big unknown. This race is not settled, and I normally don't agree with Scott Rasmussen, but I do agree with him on this one.
Yeah, there's a lot of factors here. One, Kay Ivey getting out of this race. By the way, stupid of her to get in the lieutenant governor's race. Little Jim Folsom is the current lieutenant governor. He's an incumbent. I don't see how she wins that race. So,
nah.
I mean, she could have stayed in her current office instead of, and if I was going to drop down, I'd just drop back where I was the incumbent and could put the I behind my name.
Right.
If I just stayed in there. But then her getting out, how does it affect it? The more her voters go to Moore, the more of her voters go to Byrne or somebody else. That's a huge thing. Also, it says in here, public policy polling found that Ron Sparks actually strips off about 12% of Republicans, but then Artur Davis does that too. But also, Sparks even holds a lead among Alabama independents against Moore, which is virtually unheard of for Democrats in the South in this cycle. So, you know, Sparks against Moore would be, it seems like, the one recipe for a Democratic victory in, you know, 2010 in the Alabama governor's race at this point. Also, you're talking about the bloody and burn up. To me, one thing that would happen is if Moore were to attack him with a lot of his crazy attacks, he might make Burns seem more moderate and then make it to where you really can't win over many independents in Alabama.
But you get, wouldn't you wonder then where if they had a divisive, bitter runoff, then wouldn't you wonder where Moore's voters was going to go? Like I said, it would be largely religious conservatives in this teabagger crowd, and they seem to have the memories of elephants, at least so far this year.
Yeah, the take your ball and go home type phenomenon.
Yeah,
they might not vote.
Yeah.
Yeah, and so that is the trick there. But if I was a Republican trying to win, you know, win the election, I'd much rather have Byrne than Moore. I'd have to think, given these sets of vote totals. But here's the thing: if it's Roy Moore and Arthur Davis, I mean, given these numbers, does Davis really have a good shot? Because I do believe black candidates can win statewide in the South. But I don't know that in Alabama in 2010 it's the right recipe, and particularly for a candidate who might lose anywhere from, say, 10% to 15% of his base because they believe he's too conservative for voting against health care. So he might actually lose.
Well, but they're not gonna vote for Roy Moore.
But it might be take your ball and go home.
I don't know.
But David, do you guys wonder if that health care vote is going to cost Davis the nomination?
Yeah, that's more likely scenario to me.
I think it may. It's opened up so many things for Sparks. I mean, it probably gives Sparks, it probably helps him in two ways among progressive voters. One, any African-American voters might not have even thought about Sparks, but now they're like, well, he didn't support the president, and Sparks does, and maybe this thing's not just race. And then he gets, you know, black voters he wouldn't have gotten. Also, there may be some liberal voters that would, you know, say, hey, I want to see Alabama change. I want to see the state of George Wallace, you know, become where they can elect a minority. But then the health care vote goes, well, but then not this minority because he's not progressive enough. And so Arthur Davis has really, you know, created a mess for himself. Although, again,
yeah,
the question was, oh, well, I'll never be able to win over middle-of-the-road, slight-leaning Republicans if I support the health care legislation. He was trying to run the general before he won the primary, and that's hard to do.
You know, though, David, I think about Tom Harkin. He has been asked, I don't know how many times over the years, how in the world does someone as liberal as you win election after election in your state? And he said, it's very simple. I'm true to myself, and the voters know what they're getting.
Yeah.
When they vote. This vote that Davis made really surprised me. I don't believe that he believed in that vote. I believed it was politically calculated, and I really do believe it's going to blow up in his face and cost him the nomination over there.
Yeah, it's going to be something to watch, and we're going to have to get somebody from left in Alabama on soon to, you know, give us more of an on-the-ground opinion. Well, I guess while we're in Alabama, they did do a poll number on the Alabama Senate race, and my goodness, you almost forget there's an Alabama Senate race. But William Barnes is the Democratic candidate. They announced a few weeks ago, I'm thinking kind of got past us, but he is losing by 27 points to Richard Shelby. I mean, Richard Shelby has gotten 59% of the vote. Not Sure and Some Other is 3-6, which is an incredibly low number. You'd have to say there's a few more undecideds. But, you know, Richard Shelby, it looks like at this point, would get over 60% of the vote.
Yeah.
Does Barnes have any shot here?
No.
No. So,
that was quick and merciless.
Yeah, but you think, in Georgia and North Carolina, people, you know, say, hey, there's an opportunity, there's an opening. In Alabama, you just hear no one saying that's the case. So it's just totally different dynamic. I guess people like Shelby. I just think Shelby's a little bit of a political opportunist. after he switched, and then
he is very well liked over there, though.
Yeah, his signature issue is trying to let people have guns in Washington D.C. To me, I've heard more in the past 5 years that Richard Shelby wants to do for Washington D.C. than what he wants to do for Alabama. I mean, if you're in Birmingham and you don't have health care, or you're in Mobile and you want more education funds, or you're somewhere else and you're worrying about, you know, your job in Huntsville, do you really give a crap if they have guns or not in D.C.? I mean, you know what I mean?
Honestly, I think people do care about that.
Maybe they do.
I think it's ludicrous and ridiculous, but I think that those are the kind, you know, those guns always work. People want gun freedom.
Three states away in a place that probably, you know, two-thirds of the Alabama voters have never even been to.
Right.
It's just crazy.
I'm sure they think, well, he's fighting for gun rights, and that's important to me.
Yeah. It's so crazy. I mean, can y'all think of another issue that Richard Shelby's been out on front on besides D.C. gun laws?
Do you remember when he walked out of the stimulus meetings with a great flourish and indignantly held a impromptu press conference there right in front of the White House last year? I guarantee you the conservative voters in Alabama ate that right up. This guy's a good politician.
Yeah, and apparently he's a safe one too, but
yeah.
Wish William Barnes well on that. And so we'll go from there. Well, I tell you what, just kind of moving down the line, like I said, we got polls and more polls. Arkansas Senate, Blanche Lincoln, I guess these are the first set of poll numbers since, you know, Bill Halter, the lieutenant governor, got in the race against her. I tell you, it's not like either one of those numbers look real good. Tim, what do you think here? I mean, is Halter a better choice than Lincoln, or does it even matter?
I think his numbers look a little bit better than her. His fundraising numbers are really looking surprisingly good. And one thing, if you compare her to earlier polls, she's dropping like a rock, and she's the incumbent. She's dead in the water.
She's
dead in the water.
It's around NFL draft time, and the key phrase is always upside. I think he's got more upside than her at this point.
Right.
But my goodness, what a set of candidates. I tell you one thing, Rasmussen, they spared no expense asking about every possible combination there might be. Catherine, look at all these poll numbers.
I know, it's crazy, isn't it?
Anything stick out?
I haven't looked at them that closely, but
it looks like Curtis Coleman would be a mistake for the Republicans, just looking at it quickly. It seems like Halter does, you know, he does a little bit better than some. But I tell you one thing that's kind of interesting. Some of these Republican nominees are also Rands, and Bill Halter's their sitting lieutenant governor, and he still trails some of these Republicans, which he's a little of a known commodity.
These Republicans, I was going to say, are not exactly A-list candidates either. I mean, this is really troubling. I mean, it is what it is. We run a great risk of losing that Senate seat out there, and I believe we certainly will lose it if Senator Lincoln's the nominee.
Yeah, I think so, too. But the one thing I have to say is that, you know, this poll was taken on March 30th, I think, yeah. So, you know, I think that in the coming months, weeks and months, as, you know, the information about the Health Care Reform Act comes, you know, I think that that could change these dynamics to a pretty good degree. But I don't think it's going to help her. I think she's just disliked.
Yeah, and it can't help her because if the health care legislation gets to be more known about popular, then people will just be madder at her.
Exactly,
yes,
yeah. David, you recall that she got a lot of negative press from progressive last year for opposing the public option. She
yes,
was
and
front
remember,
and center in opposing it.
And, yeah, and you remember Keith Overman, they actually did one of their free health care clinics in Little Rock just to target her, to try to get her to change her vote. She was very adamant about it. Played a little differently than Landrieu.
Boy,
Democratic,
too.
Yeah, well, Democratic primary voters know her and already know how they feel about her. When he goes up on television and starts spending some of that considerable war chest he's amassed, I've got to wonder if these numbers are not going to move even more in his favor toward her.
Yeah, I think he can take her in the primary. The question is, how does he take her in a way that he then can become the next senator from Arkansas and not the next Democratic nominee only?
Don't you wish she would be have a Chris Dodd moment? That would settle it all, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I think she's a little young, although she could say, hey, I want to
she's younger than me.
My family. I said, well, yeah, I mean, she's a little young compared to Chris Dodd. I mean, he's had quite a career up there. I mean, I don't know how many terms he's had. And he ran for president. I mean, he kind of tried to grab the brass ring, didn't succeed. So, I mean, there's been a decent arc to his career, whereas hers is kind of what you would assume was at the top of the arch, at a minimum, maybe even still on the rise in her mind.
But she can read the same poll numbers we read, David. She's got to know that she's going to lose if we're sitting here in Georgia knowing it, right?
Yeah, but, Tim, it's like when I coach games. Everybody in the stands may give up, but I'm still trying to figure out plays and strategies to win the game. I don't ever give up. And when you're in the heat of the battle, you probably think, oh, I've got this plan. I've got this way to do it.
The old lightning will strike. Yeah, lightning will strike.
Yeah, right. You're too in the thick of it. So that may be in there. But yeah, it's going to be another race to watch. Well, I guess we're going to kind of wrap a lot of Florida in together here. Before we get into the poll numbers, kind of change gears a little bit, Jim Greer, the Florida Republican head, he got pushed out of office this week. Did I get his name wrong? Or did I get his name correct?
Got it correct.
Y'all are laughing. I'm sitting here thinking, goodness, I must have got it wrong.
I was thinking about him.
Yeah, he got pushed out of office. Now, of course, he's a close ally of Charlie Crist. Well, first, Tim, I'll go ahead and let you comment on him getting pushed out, and then we can talk about the political analysis, what this does for Crist.
It don't help him at all, of course. He and looks like there's going to be criminal investigation of him, too. So any news about Greer from this point is going to be negative, and whoever's reading it on the news is always going to follow it with the sentence you just said, David, a close ally of Charlie Crist, right?
Yes. Yep. And so this won't be good. Catherine, tell us more.
Well, yeah, it doesn't look good for Charlie Crist. And, you know, it doesn't look good for the Republicans. Like, they just cannot manage their money. You know, they're just, like, they're very irresponsible. I think it's really funny. You know, they're always touted as the, party of business and this and that. But, you know, between this guy and Steele and, everybody else, it's like, okay, well, can't really trust them with your money, can you?
Yeah.
The word is scandal. They need to stay away from that this year, in a year that they should have a banner year. They don't need a bunch of scandals again. And look who they're coming from, these party chairs. I mean, come on. What is wrong? What are they just, they got a death wish?
Yeah, it's because you're trying to say, hey, we're the party of good government, fiscal responsibility. I mean, that's part of their narrative. And if their governing's indicative of their party management, fall my claim. There's just no proof to back it up. But I guess then that kind of takes us into the poll numbers. And in the poll, both Crist and Rubio both lead Kendrick Meek. But I did notice he picks up 5 points
over the last time they polled. And, you know, if he can pick up 5 points every time they poll, he can get right back in this thing. But, you know, get 5 points every single time is a tall order. But another thing that kind of struck me, Marco Rubio actually does 3 points better than Charlie Crist against Kendrick Meek. And I know when that was the difference, Crist did better in the general against Meek than Rubio does. But now, you know, Charlie Crist loses that argument. He can't say, hey, I can beat the Democrat according to the numbers. Catherine.
Well, you know, I heard on NPR this week that whoever it was on talking, they were talking about Rubio and Crist, and they were saying that they thought Crist, that it was evening out and that Crist might start to gain a little bit of momentum. But I don't know where their numbers came from.
You arrived at your location, and then the person they were interviewing was from the Charlie Crist campaign, maybe?
Here's the deal. This thing comes out about Greer. Polling comes out that shows Crist running 22 points behind Rubio now. And Rudy Giuliani played a little gotcha with Crist. Remember when he was down there trying to get Crist to endorse him in the Florida primary in 08, and Crist endorsed John McCain instead? McCain won Florida, knocked Giuliani out of the race. Well, this week Giuliani endorsed Rubio. It looks to me like the sharks smell blood in the water and the rats are jumping off the ship, David,
but
don't you?
Yeah, and maybe
anyone,
that means...
Does anyone see the irony in Giuliani endorsing Rubio?
Giuliani
is like about the most Democratic Republican you could find.
Well, don't say that. I don't want him.
Pro-choice. he dresses up in women's clothing. I find it really ironic that he would, you know, I mean, that is clearly just a, like you said, a gotcha on Crist. I'm sure he doesn't really.
Yeah, but Giuliani, he's more hollow than those chocolate Easter eggs that
we've
got today. There's just nothing to him. And then I guess stay with Florida, Alex Sink, you know, she's touted as such a great candidate. She's at 36. She picked up 1 point on her side, and McCollum went down 1 point. I don't think there's anything special about McCollum. He's a retread, and Alex Sink's going nowhere. She runs, I mean, you know, Kendrick Meek, who's only served in 1/20th of the state of Florida, you know, is about to outpoll her, and she's been elected statewide. What's the matter with her campaign?
I don't know.
They've not run a good campaign so far from everything I can read. You're right about McCollum. He is as boring as that cream-colored wall I'm standing here looking at right now. She's really painted herself into a corner now. They've run a terrible campaign at this point. David, they've got 7 months to straighten it out, but boy, a double-digit lead 7 months out don't look good.
Yeah, and let's quickly go through some of these polls. North Carolina, it looks like just everybody kind of picked up points and took them away from undecided against Elaine Marshall. She picks up one. Richard Burr picks up one. Cal Cunningham seemed to make a little more movement than Richard Burr, the other Democratic candidate, to try to get the nomination. But Burr's just right there with 50. If the political winds change, that could be a race. If it stays like it is now, he just happened to have his election the right year, I think.
That's right.
And then in Tennessee, they polled a bunch of people, but Mike McWhirter, the son of Ned McWhirter, is the only one still in the race. But he trails every Republican he can find, and I didn't see any Republican primary polling there. Tim.
Yeah, from what I can hear from my buddy up in Nashville, looks like there's going to be a runoff there on the Republican side, probably between Zach Wamp, who we know because
he's right across the state line up here in Chattanooga, and maybe the mayor of Knoxville.
Is that Ramsey?
I forgot the guy's name. ashamed to say.
Womp does a little. Hey, Womp does worse than the other Republicans.
But he's running a little ahead in the Republican primary. So go figure.
So changing gears real quick, he's having better luck than Nathan Deal, I take it. The Congress trying to run for governor, because he isn't having any luck. Catherine, Nathan Deal, what do you think?
Why is it always Georgia? we've had our week, haven't we?
Oh yeah, we've had a year.
But Nathan, he keeps trying to push ahead. I just think somebody needs to tell him. I mean, there's no way you're going to even make the runoff at this point.
Yeah,
make the
runoff.
Yeah.
You know, David, I was thinking, looks like Eric Johnson's going to be the first one to go up on TV. If it makes his poll numbers move at all, Deal drops to fourth. I think then it'd be time for somebody to tell him, look, Congressman, it's over. Don't you think it's over for him now?
I think it is, but now he's given up his House seat, although, you know, of course, that was problems anyway, because
yeah, that was
then he would have been
funny.
More susceptible to charges brought about him even quicker. That's the thing. He had his base up there in northeast Georgia, pretty much north Georgia was his base. But then, now they may feel abandoned by him because he left, even though he figured he needed the time to fundraise and campaign. So he's just in a no-win situation there. And then you add to it the fact that that he's just not doing well amongst the Republican nominees. So just be interested to see what happens there. But I don't think anything interesting is going to happen with him other than him giving it up.
Well, let me ask you this. Do you think anything interesting is – I keep wondering if Eric Johnson's going to make a big move in this thing.
Well, everybody keeps saying that he may. We'll see.
He's got the money.
Yeah. I mean, we'll just see. It's almost like they're still searching for a better candidate themselves, but the, you know, political winds are with them. Speaking of George, the political winds, Johnny Isaacson. Has he been in the hospital 2 times since we last were on the air, or was it we was in the hospital and went back again?
Yeah. He had just gotten out last time, and now he's just got out again. So.
Yeah.
He went in the hospital the first time 2 weeks ago today.
Yeah.
So then he was discharged a few days later, and then he went back in again earlier this week.
But you talk about a political earthquake. If suddenly Johnny Isaacson just up and said, you know what, guys, my health is not going to let me run again, the reverberations throughout the state, stunning is not too strong a word, is it, for this? I mean,
yeah,
they'd be scrambling everywhere.
Well, and here's the question, okay. Let's say this, that there's several scenarios. One, does he decide to, you know, play it straight up and let people know a week or two before qualifying, both parties can qualify, the Republicans, maybe multiple people decide to make the jump and make it a primary. Two, does he either qualify and then, you know, dequalify late in the week and let somebody else take his spot, or even say, hey, I'm going on Friday, and then have somebody else jump in there and kind of, you know, do a backdoor picking of your successor. We've seen this in some state house and state senate seats. We've never seen it as a race high as
David, we have a caller from the 404 area.
And let's bring him on in 1 second, but let me lay out the third scenario. The third scenario would be, does he go ahead, qualify and closes? He's the only Republican. The Democrats have, not as a big a name nominee, and then he can come pull himself off the ballot as the only nominee, and the Republicans can replace him with a person of their choosing. So all three of those scenarios could happen. Yes, caller, what's just on your mind?
Hey, guys, this is Mayo from Georgia. I'm just checking in with you. I missed your spot on Georgia, but it sounds like you circled back around and ended up back there anyways. If you guys, I haven't been able to find anything on Roy Barnes' reaction to the Thurgood Baker thing, and I haven't been able to find his reaction on the healthcare plan that passed. I haven't been able to find him on record on it. I don't know if you guys...
Governor Barnes seems to have, I don't want to use the word cleverly, but he has, what's the word I'm looking for, judiciously or carefully said nothing,
right.
Pretty much.
Yeah, but if I remember, I think last week, I believe, Del Carwell, our special guest host, had talked a little about it, that Roy Barnes kind of was, you know, hey, it could be a better bill, but, you know, it is what it is. Something kind of weak there, you know, maybe trying to play more for the general. But then, you know, he's got to be kicking himself, or kicking Sonny Perdue, if you will, for giving Thurbert Baker all this good attention, because this is really going to help Thurbert Baker in the Democratic primary.
Right, it is.
And it keeps going. We thought it was just going to be one cycle. It's about 2 weeks. Using a cycle as in our show. It's been 2 weeks now it's going on.
I don't think this is going to play out. I think this is going to keep being talked about, don't you?
The Baker issue?
Yeah.
I don't think there's enough Republicans in the Gold Dome to I think the majority of the Republicans in the state just want to see it go away. I think you've got 20, or I don't know how many you got there, 20 or 30 that signed onto that. I don't think it's going to go anywhere. I mean, they want Sonny to pursue it with a private, an alternative to Thurbert Baker to pursue it that way. But I don't think they want to pursue moving Thurbert Baker.
But don't you think that Democratic primary voters are going to warm up to Baker on account of this?
Yeah, I think. I mean, it doesn't mess Barnes up because Barnes could have played to the right of the healthcare issue. He could afford to play to the right and still beat Baker, and that would help him in November. But now, you know, that buffer between him and Baker may not allow him to play. I mean, the smartest thing Barnes could have done before this Baker thing happened was come out and just say, you know, this healthcare thing was a mess. There's, you know, I mean, he. That would have been the smartest thing he could have done.
That would have actually hurt him in the primary because he's already got the bull moose comments around his neck.
Right. But I think he had the primary. I don't think there was much he could do to mess up the primary.
I think
Thurbert Baker's enough of a player. Yeah.
I think that Thurbert Baker being I think that he has shown in this brouhaha with Governor Perdue and with the, I think he's shown that he's very strong and I think it's been very good for him, and I think that David's right that it will play well for him in the primary and it's given him a lot of attention. I think it would have been a huge mistake. I think Roy Barnes actually played this very well by saying whatever, you know, by sort of soft peddling it and saying, well, it's not the best bill, but if whatever it was that he said. I think that as we learn more about how this health care reform is going to work, I think it's going to become more and more popular. And when we get to the fall in the elections, the Republicans who have been opposed to it and have been obstructionists about it are going to look like fools.
Well, and Mel, I want to ask you another question because I think from our past conversations you're more Republican-leaning. Let's just say that Sonny Perdue and the Republicans get their way. They somehow impeach Thurbert Baker. They get him an attorney general that will work to repeal the bill. And they convince enough Democrats, they scare enough Democrats, and they get a repeal of the bill in the next few months before the 2010 elections. They repeal it, or even if they take the House and the Senate and they repeal it after the fact, It's going to go to the president's desk. He's going to veto it. What's the point of all this, particularly the impeachment of an elected official that's going to be out of office in his current office in January anyway, and this much to do about nothing?
Who's going to veto? You said the president is going
to veto. President Obama. When they pass the bill to repeal this bill, that bill goes to the president's desk. And he vetoes it unless he somehow has a change of heart, I think it's pretty unlikely.
All right, so you're talking on a national level. I thought you were talking
on a national level. This is a national
issue. They're not going to.
The Republicans
have made a state
issue into a national issue.
Yeah, but
Gentlemen, I hate to cut it short, but it's 8 o'clock, and we're going to have to go off the air. Mel, thank you so much for calling us, and please call back.
Keep listening and keep calling. Yeah. Well, I knew we were getting there too, Tia, but we're just having a good discussion. Well, you know, that's how it happens. And we didn't even talk about several of our topics, so we'll just have to wait until next week. And I believe next week is the 11th, and we're going to have a special guest, the Democratic candidate for U.S. House and that special election for Nathan Deal. He's going to join us, and there'll be plenty more. So until next week, this has been the Cozy Vine.
Good night, guys.
Good night. Bye.